Mike Costa.
It's a feeling it Friday.
And Judson Richards.
What?
On a feeling it Friday.
What? What?
Here's Costa and Judson.
Family, hope you are having a great one, that your day is getting off to a great start, and we so happy you are with us, gaining new family members as the days go by here on Exit 1360 Fox Sports San Diego. We'll talk a little rookie quarterback from a stat perspective based on what we saw last night as the first full week of preseason opened up in the NFL. 7:30, the guy who comes on before us, we're lucky enough to kind of feed off the scraps. He leaves us. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. We'll speak with Mike at 7:30, 7:45. We'll get to my daily dump. Before we talk about the awesomeness that is Tatis Jr., I want you to hear how awesome it is to sleep with Judson Richards, especially when the alarm goes off every morning, as it does Monday through Friday, when he gets up and to come in here and do this fun job.
Well, I'd like to offer an apology to my lovely fiance Lauren this morning. I don't know. I must have been in a deep sleep, but I heard my alarm go off. You know, I've had a problem with my iPhone where in the alarm settings I can't adjust the volume, so it goes off full bore, like as loud as it. Even if you don't have it set at full volume, it goes off full volume.
Sure,
I can't figure out how to fix it, so it's on this. It just vibrates, so I hear it vibrate on the table, bedside table. And so I reached to turn it off this morning. I hit one snooze and then I get out of bed.
Okay.
But I didn't realize in this fog I was in that I was facing the other direction. So as I reached to turn off my alarm, I just bopped her on the top of the head.
Snooze, Lauren. Yes,
I know. I tried to permanently snooze her with a smack on the top of the dome.
Did she wake up?
Yes.
What did she say?
She goes, "Did you think I was your phone?" And I said, yeah, and then I was like, it's a good thing I didn't try to text somebody, just poking her in the face. Beep, boop, boop, beep.
Yeah, Lauren, what happened to your eyeballs? Yeah,
exactly.
Judd thought it was a phone.
Babe, my bad, babe.
Oh, babe.
It's my bad, babe.
Oh, babe. Do we have...
Keep your head on a swivel, babe.
Do we have the most exciting baseball player right now in the major leagues in Fernando Tatis Jr.?
You know, it's not even close. He reminds me a little bit of like the flair and the skill set of a Javier Baez, but he's better than Javier Baez. Javier's had some great seasons. He's a World Series champion. Don't get me wrong, but you look at his skill set, you look at the tools, and Fernando Tatis Jr. is better than Javier Baez. He's at least projected to be, and I feel very confident in saying that. A couple stats on Fernando before we set the question for you. Just a reminder, because he homered again as a leadoff.
Like,
it's like, just put him on.
Yeah.
Just suffer the fate and put him at first base. But among players in the modern era, that goes back to 1900. Fernando Tatis Jr.'s 6 leadoff home runs ties with Ronald Acuna Jr. for most within players' first 79 games.
Jeez.
You got to go back 100 and whatever years. How about this? Most, because you know, I've compared him to A-Rod, a young A-Rod. Most home runs as a shortstop in a season before turning 21, 2 guys. A-Rod in 96, Fernando Tatis Jr. this year.
I grew as
two guys.
Okay, as a San Diego native, I grew up with Padres baseball. I'm not the most ardent, diehard Padres fan, but they're in your hometown. You get to know the team. You get to know the history of the team. And is Fernando Tatis Jr. the most exciting Padre ever? I mean, that is a big blanket. 844-570-1360. Who was more exciting than what Fernando Tatis Jr. has been in not yet his first full season in the majors?
Well, I think more exciting, maybe that's a really difficult question to ask.
All around great baseball player
since.
Okay, now I grew up with a thunderstick like Nate Colbert, who was a fan favorite. I grew up with Dave Winfield, who was awesome. And let's fast forward to guys like, you know, for a brief time, Ozzie Smith. We know what Ken Caminiti used to do at third base, throwing from his knees, and, you know, he hit the ball a country mile. I don't even need to talk about what Tony Gwynn meant to the city and what he meant to that team. But Tony was not that dynamic of a defensive player. He was a good defensive player. But what... And maybe it's unfair to those other guys I mentioned because this is a shortstop who for a bulk of the game is somehow going to be involved in what's going on defensively.
Well, again, we're not comparing him. We're just asking him the most exciting Padre since who? Like, who was the last guy that brought you this much excitement? And there's a name that jumps out to me, 844-570-1360. Doesn't always have to be the same position that he plays. To me, it's Jake Peavy. You know, Jake Peavy brought this kind of, he brought this confidence, this arrogance, and this kind of, you know, the minerals he had on the mound where you're like, that's our guy.
That was, that's our guy. He was the team bulldog.
And you couldn't be more proud that he was your guy and you wanted him on the mound. And you look at Fernando Tatis Jr. and it's like, holy crap, that's our guy.
Yes.
Like that, he's not a Yankee. He's not a Red Sox.
No.
He's not a Dodger. He is your guy.
And I know that because of the season that they're having, that we're looking for the silver linings and the dark clouds. And I don't think it's biased because we're in San Diego. You just look at him compared. Well, you just read the stat about just home runs by itself. He and A-Rod.
And he missed a month.
And he missed a month of playing. And I think you would, if you were to have this conversation on a national platform, I think there'd be a lot of baseball pundits who'd say, yeah, you know, Padres, you got the most exciting guy in baseball right now.
Yeah, so I'll also take into account that as the team is playing really poor baseball, Fernando Tatis Jr. has not fallen into any sort of big slump. As the season, as long as it is for a guy the first time in the bigs playing this much baseball, he doesn't look to show fatigue either. Again,
no.
He ran into a slump, which is going to happen. But as many home runs as he's hit, especially the leadoff position, the kind of defense that he's playing, the mental and physical fatigue I think you would expect to see is not showing up. That this is a guy, what you hope, he just loves playing baseball. It's not a job. It's not a chore. He's not excited to go spend money in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
He loves the game of baseball. He's having fun doing it. Our good friend CJ, family member, wants to weigh in. Hey, CJ, happy Friday, buddy.
Happy Friday to you guys, too. But before I give my comp, somebody needs to be recognized for predicting this Padres second half, and that is Ben Fletcher sitting back there behind the board ops when he said that the Padres were going to tank after the All-Star break.
Did he say that?
I don't recall.
First of all, CJ, who is Ben Fletcher?
Yeah, that would entail us listening.
Wrong Fletcher.
Oh, okay. Okay, that guy.
But it was him, though, who said that, because I was sitting in the studio with him when he said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Be nice to me, guys.
No, right, honestly, I really don't remember him saying, but I remember him saying much. I'm like, get my coffee. All right?
I give this comp to Fernando Tatis, though, and that is Benito Santiago.
Ooh, good one.
Both of them do things that I had never seen before those guys came up.
Yeah.
And Santiago was throwing from the knees. He had that 34-game hitting streak as a catcher. He was stealing bases as a catcher. That rookie season, I think he had around 15 to 20 stolen bases that year. That is the guy that I'm going to say he is the most comparable rookie who has come up, where you just say, man, I got to watch a Padre game just to see what Benito or Fernando are going to do.
And CJ, that's a great barometer, how much of an impact a guy not only has on his team, not only in the stat and record book, but is the quasi-fan even getting into that, okay, Padres are on, it's must-see TV because of the rookie.
No doubt. It is sensational. Offensively, defensively, really, and I don't know, it's not often where you go, I can't wait to watch him run the bases. I can't wait to watch a guy run the bases. But FTJ, it's like, I can't wait to watch him run the bases.
Damn it,
he homered.
Well, somebody put out on Twitter that there's not enough stars in the universe. If Gerry Coleman was still calling games, to hang a star on what Fernando Tatis Jr. could possibly end up doing if he spends his whole career as a Padre. And I'm running out of adjectives. It's like you see him do something now and not to go, oh, yeah, ho-hum. But I think really question mark is what I say now when I see Fernando Tatis Jr. do something else spectacular. Oh, doctor.
The spectacular Ben Fletcher. Now,
wow.
Did you have that take on air or did you have it just off air to CJ?
No, CJ and I were talking game in the back.
Let's talk bull.
Okay.
All right.
A little shop.
And so, let me get this right. So we invite family members in, which we will continue to do.
Yeah.
You turn to CJ one of the most diehard Padre fans I ever met. And in your introductory meeting, you tell him his favorite team is about to tank.
No, I think I said something like they weren't going to win a series for a while, which they have not won a series since they've gotten back from the All-Star break.
You're like, here's so that's tanking.
I don't think I ever used the word tank.
Hmm.
I just said they were going to be really bad in the second half.
Yeah, you're right. Tanking would mean that that's the goal to be bad, right? So you're right. Tanking would be the right word. Go into the tank, I think, is what CJ said.
And they're there.
We're not necessarily in NFL whip-around form. We're going to have to work up to regular season.
Okay, it's preseason. It's training camp. It's what it's here for.
Now, we've kind of, for preseason, we're not going to worry about the scores.
No.
We're going to focus on the players that we were most excited to see preseason week number one.
And last night was centered around the rookie quarterbacks getting out on the field for the first time and normal what a pregame warm-up is, in-game, dealing with the media afterwards. Dwayne Haskins, out of Ohio State, made his debut last night for the Washington Redskins, a very pedestrian 8-14, threw for 117 yards. He did toss two interceptions. Here's his first one.
You have to think Jay Gruden is just drooling at the opportunity of what he can do with the young man. That one is thrown into the wrong direction.
Drooling pick.
Picked off and taken all the way into the end zone for a touchdown. What a terrific play by Mac Wilson. And here's a guy who we talked at length about in the preseason. Dwayne Haskins never saw.
No, it was...
Jay Gruden's got to be drooling. Pick six.
Damn it. That's not drool. It's blood from him biting his lip. Here is Dwayne in post game on his first game.
My spot, alert rails, man coverage. Should have thrown over the top. I tried to back shoulder him. Bad throw. Second pick, it was all go. Cover three, corner mid-pointed. Did a great job jamming Flanny on the seam cut. Try to anticipate it in there. It wasn't looking for me. Corner mid-pointed pick. Stuff happens.
Did he just throw the receiver under the bus saying he wasn't looking for me? Oh, really? Ooh. Mm. Must be nice to be perfect.
Should they just cut him now, or?
Controversy in camp.
Mighty Mouse took the field. Chargers versus the Cardinals.
Is that what you're going to call him now?
Sure.
I like it.
Yeah, I like
Here
it too, man.
I come to save the day.
Cliff Kingsbury said in post, he's been little his whole life. Like that. One hell of a description. I was impressed with Kyler Murray. I still got a lot of questions. But 6-for-7, 44 yards, and a win over the Chargers. Nick Hardwick will join us at 8 o'clock. We'll talk more about it with him. Here's him throwing the football.
Second down and 9. Cardinals backed up to their 3. To the air for the first time, Kyler throws to the left flat. Caught by Jameer Bird. He goes out of bounds at the 10-yard line.
What did you think overall?
I thought he did quite well his first time out. And again, Cliff Kingsbury could not have scripted a better scenario for Kyler Murray to get into the game.
Yeah. You can see the foot speed. There was one play where he rolled out. He was elusive. He showed arm strength on the go, on the move, which he'll need. Still curious about if he can be in the pocket and create a vertical game, because you will absolutely need that to be what they expect him to be.
They also showed zero creativeness with their offense last night, which was obviously on purpose. No one is.
High percentage passes for
him. I'm curious to see when Kyler Murray gets out of the pocket scripted, not on the run last night.
Sure. Very true.
Do you want the audio of Murray? Okay. Daniel Jones made his debut in the Big Apple. They call it the Snoopy Bowl because it's MetLife Stadium. It was the Giants and the Jets. Hate the new Jets uniforms, by the way. 5-for-5, 67 yards. Did throw a touchdown. Eli Watch is officially underway. Here's DJ and the touchdown pass.
Jones out of the gun, Gallman to his left, double receivers left, and Fowler to the right. Back to throw, first and 10 from the 12, to the end zone, right corner, touchdown! Welcome to the NFL, Daniel Jones as he hits Benny Fowler, and the Giants have tied it at 6.
Is that the great Bob Papa?
I think it was.
Love him!
Yeah, no relation to Greg, but they're both equally as good. Daniel Jones looked exceptional last night, taking everything into consideration. I don't think you can lessen what Jones accomplished just because it was preseason week one. For a guy who's had as many doubters as he's had, I thought his footwork was impressive. I thought his pocket presence was really great. I thought his accuracy was spot on. I thought his ownership was really, really good for that moment. I got to give Danny Jones for mocking him yesterday.
Yes.
For just his really flaccid energy level, sounding like Eli Manning. I know when people love when I use that word. I thought he was terrific.
Yeah.
Do I need to chew it and do it? Or?
He sounds like Danny Manning and not the basketball player from Kansas, the youngest of the Manning brothers when he speaks. That's Daniel Jones.
Are you taking jokes from him? Did he slide that in your ear?
No, he didn't
no,
at all.
I said if no. anybody knows flaccid,
it's you.
Okay. Oh.
Head coach.
Wah, wah, wah.
Pat Shermer did say after the game to the people who are already saying about Daniel Jones starting week one, slow your roll.
I don't buy that for a second. Eli is on his way out. Do you think he just started packing after the game?
I would assume the duffel bag is open and unzipped, and there may be a pair of old socks in there. A quarterback who did see the field, not for the Cardinals last night, but for the Chargers, the great Easton Stick. 7 of 11, 78 yards. He did have an interception. He also scored a touchdown.
He continues to rush the passer the way he has done the last 3 years. That'll help those guys on the island. A lot of running room for Stick. And how about the move by Stick to the end zone? Touchdown.
Old QB controversy of brewing there up in L.A. Going to be Rivers, going to be Taylor, or is it going to be Easton Stick?
Yeah, well, you know it's preseason week one when the guy who gets in fourth, we have audio. Here is Easton Stick in post.
Obviously, a crucial mistake with the interception, and we'll learn from it and move on. And that's part of the game, unfortunately. But like I said, proud of how collectively as an offense we handled it, moved the ball the next drive. Defense did a great job, you know, getting it back to us quick. We went down and scored, so that was fun.
Okay, is that Philip Rivers Jr. talking? Doesn't he have the kind of the same cadence and kind of saying the same thing that Philip would have said?
I didn't hear it.
Listen to it again.
Not nearly as much twang.
No?
Yeah. You're really reaching there.
Okay. Wow, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Fletch. Hit him again with it. Can we hit him again with it? Bend over, Costa. Get him again. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. One more time. Yeah.
Ooh.
One more time. There it is. Yeah. Yeah. Did you wake up feeling dangerous this morning?
A little bit.
Because
a little bit.
I think Baker Mayfield could be dangerous in 2019.
He's back on the field.
He's throwing touchdowns, man. Here he is, the Baker.
You know, I think there's a time for it, but in our division, we got to be able to slow the clock down and run the ball when we need to. You know, there's situations where, yeah, we can press the tempo a little bit, and I think, you know, once we get comfortable in that, we can be pretty good at playing fast and having success, but we got to be good at it all.
We almost looked in regular season form.
It's okay.
Almost.
Well, no one would have known if you didn't just bring that up.
Well, if anyone listening who've heard us go highlight to interview.
Yeah.
Can we get a little Baker highlight?
Mayfield takes a shotgun snap, looks, throwing middle up, caught it, touchdown, hits Higgins. Baker Mayfield on fire, and he goes into the end zone with the rest of the offense, and they snap a picture of Higgins in the left corner. And that's how it's going to go, everybody. 24 yards and a touchdown.
You know, there's two ways you could go with that. You could go the way of relax, it's preseason week one. Or you could go the way of the Browns are creating some energy, excitement, camaraderie. If you saw the sideline, you could say that they are using the preseason to actually grow for the regular season, which is something that a lot of teams are like, forget about the preseason, no number ones, we'll just try to figure out a few spots.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like the Browns actually utilized what you'd think what the preseason would be for, to prepare energy, excitement, camaraderie, all of that in a preseason game, and I felt like they captured it.
It's not an unbased excitement or cockiness. There is a reason for that team to be feeling good about itself before they begin the trek that is the NFL season. But they know. They, if things go right, they have a chance to make some noise this year and possibly see the postseason.
I do think that some of the predictions of how good the Browns are going to be are a bit overplayed. A lot to do with Freddie Kitchens, first-year coach, in a rather tough division. But if Baker Mayfield is as good as he looks to be at times, there's no stopping a team that's got a quarterback that is a real leader with real accuracy, can read a defense like he can. I mean, if Baker is great, it won't necessarily matter some of the shortcomings I think they're going to have. He will keep them in it.
Well, then you throw into it the weapons that he does have. And if Landry and OBJ, and when they're going to get the fresh legs of Kareem Hunt back halfway through the season, they kind of jettisoned the Duke Johnson problem. There's a reason to be excited about that football team.
No doubt. And we are excited.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Feeling It Friday, Costa.
Feeling It, family. How you feeling on a Feeling It Friday?
You feeling good?
I feel great. I feel great. And I'm pumped because of who's coming up next. I love this guy's show. I love his website. It's where I go a lot. Well, no. It's profootballtalk.com.
Which website?
By the way, okay, yeah. It's not on the dark web.
What is the truth on Antonio Brown's feet and more likely to miss games, Melvin Gordon or Ezekiel Elliott? Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, answers that question coming up next.
It's the Football Hour with Nick Hardwick.
Well, let's go. We're going to run the ball here. All right, we're going to run the ball.
This morning at 8 on Extra 1360.
Hey, everybody. Darren Smith here. What did Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network, like about what he saw with the Chargers and all across the NFL? We'll ask him. We start at 12 noon on Extra 1360 and 103.3 FM.
All right, let's not keep our next guest waiting. He is about to become one of the busiest men in all of sports media as the NFL season gets started. You get to hear Mike Florio 3 to 6 on Extra 1360. Love hearing our way into work. Mike Florio joins us now. Hi, Mike. Thanks for your time. How are things?
Hey, everything's great. You know, I always smile when I hear that somebody actually listens to the show live Pacific time, because I am well aware that it is 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. But you know what? A lot of people are out, like, driving trucks and out and about, delivering newspapers, whatever. So there's a lot of people that actually listen to it, to my surprise.
No, you ain't kidding, Mike. And especially in San Diego, we are a very early, early starting city, whether people are going to the beaches before they head out to work or just getting started so they can finish earlier and go play in our beautiful city. So you are absolutely heard, even on the West Coast. Let's begin with the feet of Antonio Brown, Mike. What the hell is going on?
Well, Antonio Brown got himself into a cryotherapy chamber back in July. That was something that was reported by my on-air partner, Chris Sims, back in, Tuesday of this week. And it was July that he was in France, and he got in there, and he didn't have foot protection, and he ended up having frostbite on his feet. And it's amazing to me that this is being treated like a state secret. The Raiders won't talk about it. John Gruden refuses to discuss it. They tiptoed around in the opening episode of Hard Knocks. And they keep downplaying the situation, saying that he's day-to-day. Meanwhile, we're 2 weeks into training camp. He's practiced 1 out of 10 days with the Raiders, and there's no sign of when he's going to be ready to go. And just the fact that they're being so secretive, I think on one hand, they're trying to protect him because it looks kind of stupid to do what he did. But on the other hand, I think maybe they are concerned that this is something's going to last a while, and who knows when they're going to have this guy back. But not the ideal way for the Raiders to start their last year at Oakland.
Mike, I heard you and Chris talking driving in today about, 11 games on the slate last night. You weren't able to watch every single play from every single game. But let's assume that the three rookie quarterbacks we saw last night, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, are all going to be starters week one of the regular season. Who do you think would be poised to have the best success?
Probably Kyler Murray, just because that offense meshes so well with everything that he's always done. So it's going to be the easiest transition from the college game to the NFL game for him. And I think he's the only one that we can point to and say, this guy's starting week one. With Haskins, it's going to be an uphill climb. He's competing with Colt McCoy and Case Keenum. He looked a little shaky at times last night. Daniel Jones looked great. And I think what the Giants are trying to do, they're trying to keep the expectations low. They don't want to put him in a position where he fails. And I think they're going to continue to say there's no competition. Until, of course, there is a competition that Daniel Jones has quietly won. And I think that's the way it's going to play out. It's going to be sudden from an outsider's perspective. And it could be by week one that Daniel Jones is out there. But I think two of the three look really good. Haskins has some work to do. But, they all look, we can't tell how good any of these guys are going to be based on preseason. There's no game planning. They don't have to deal with the flow of the game. Do they get better or worse in the second half after adjustments? And those are all things that will prove themselves one way or the other once these guys are in the lineup.
Mike Florio, NBC Sports, Pro Football Talk. Mike, have you been surprised at all at how Melvin Gordon's agents have played this?
I have been because I think they've overplayed it. And I think that it's very important. I'm a big supporter of a player taking a stand against a team. Everything is set up for the team to exert leverage on the player. For everything. The fans don't get mad at the team when the team squeezes the player. Fans get upset at the player when the player tries to squeeze the team. Anytime a player holds out, you get some of these get-off-my-lawn types on radio and TV saying he's violating his contract. No, he's not, because the CBA lets him hold out if he's willing to incur the fine. But you have to choose your spot wisely. And there's a fundamental difference between Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon is not a special player. He's good. He's not great. And I don't see any reason for the Chargers to blink. And if you're going to trade him, who are you going to trade him to? Who's going to give Melvin Gordon what he wants and give the Chargers something significant in return? It's just not practical. And the question becomes whether or not Melvin Gordon holds out into the regular season, like Le'Veon Bell did last year, or whether he comes back to the team like Maurice Jones-Drew 7 years ago when he held out for all of the training camp and preseason with the Jaguars when he wanted to have his contract redone, and the Jaguars refused to do it. So I think that this one was a mistake. They've painted themselves into a corner, and I don't know how they get out of it, short of just caving at this point.
Mike, it's not really good cop, bad cop with Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones. It's like bad cop when they're talking about Zeke Elliott. What do you think inevitably happens? Is he going to get that deal that makes him happy?
Well, I think the thing that Elliott's camp did that was genius, they caught the Cowboys flat-footed with this holdout because Elliott participated in the offseason program. He was fine with this idea, supposedly fine with this idea, that he was third in line behind Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper to get a new contract. And then all of a sudden, Zeke's not coming to training camp. And I think it's taken the Cowboys a while to adjust to that. Also, during the period of time where they thought the contract was no problem, Stephen Jones said some things that's going to be very difficult for them to walk back, like Todd Gurley's contract is the starting point. He's trying to walk that back now. He told me back in May on the PFTPM podcast that Ezekiel Elliott is the straw that stirs our drink. If they knew there was an issue with Zeke, he wouldn't have said that. So now they're trying to posture. They're trying to engage in some good old-fashioned Texas bluster. And the bottom line is you're going to have to pay this guy. And they're not going to be able to say, well, it doesn't matter what Todd Gurley got. It doesn't matter what we said earlier this year. Le'Veon Bell got less than Todd Gurley, so that's the starting point. That's just not going to work. And the question becomes, when do they blink? And if they are serious about not blinking and telling Ezekiel Elliott, you're under contract for 2 more years, show up whenever you show up, we're going to make plans elsewhere, they need to go out and find someone who can be a high-end producing running back. That sends a statement. If they trade for a LeSean McCoy, that was something Shereen Williams suggested on yesterday's PFT Live. I've been saying they should try to trade for Adrian Peterson. But they make a move like that, then that sends a clear message to Zeke that, hey, if you don't show up, we have another plan to get the most out of this offense.
Mike, you think the Raiders are going to be any good this year?
No. No.
It's good enough. It's good enough for me.
Why. Yeah, but here's why. Look at their schedule. Look at who they play. Beyond playing the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Broncos twice, they play every team from the AFC South, the Titans, the Jaguars, the Colts, the Texans. They're all potentially going to be pretty good. They play every team from the NFC North. They're all potentially going to be competitive. This is a tough schedule for the Raiders. They have a preseason game in Winnipeg. I'm sure John Gruden's pissed about that. They have that long period of time where they don't have a home game, a true home game, because they play one in London. And I think that there's just too much. And the last year in Oakland, the looming move to Las Vegas, I don't think Derek Carr is the guy that John Gruden wants as his quarterback over the long haul, and I think that's going to manifest itself this season. I think this is a real year of transition for the Raiders, and it's not off to a good start with Antonio Brown. And look, here's the thing. Everybody's optimistic in the offseason. Then they start playing the games, and the bad teams emerge and the good teams emerge. And I could be wrong. I've been wrong about many things. But I expect the Raiders to be not much different than they were last year.
Would you have rather seen him this year or next year on Hard Knocks?
Well, based upon the first episode, I'd rather not see them at all. here's what I think happened. Because of what went on in Cleveland last year with that very unfortunate scene that Hugh Jackson actually thought was going to help him gain some power over Todd Haley and make Todd Haley look bad, and it blew up on Hugh Jackson. I think the negotiation to get the Raiders to agree to do this included John Gruden. And we already know that the coaches have editorial control and final say. And people call this a reality show. It's not. It's an infomercial. NFL Films makes it. That's the NFL. Let's not pretend this is an actual documentary. They're only going to show us what they want us to see. But I think this year, it's more so than ever. And I think Gruden and the Raiders made it clear, it's going to be what we want. And no matter how compelling you think a scene is, if I don't want it, you're not going to have it. Look at how much other stuff, other than football practice, football meetings we saw in the debut. We see two guys riding horses for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You got an extended old clip of John Madden talking about the seven-man sled from 2000.
Yeah.
The guys have coached the team in 40 years.
I'm watching Last Chance U again.
Yeah, Last Chance U. They got it. Who cares about the guy from Last Chance U that they ran out of? It all happened so fast. And the only thing I like is, although, you know, the rubbernecking human nature we all have is, man, I would have loved to see John Gruden tell this guy, see you later. The only good news is maybe they are going to slide away from those meetings where, you know, they bring a guy in his worst professional moment, and we all get to witness him being told that it's time to pack up and get out of here.
Oof, there's a feel-good story. Mike, hey, you do a tremendous job. Can't wait for Football Night in America to get started again as well. We hear you 3 to 6 right here on Extra 1360. The most insightful football talk out there nationally. We get it right here on Extra. Thanks again for your time this morning, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, he's right. And that was the same that we had. It's like the best stuff is on the cutting room floor, and yes, that's the way John Gruden made it. Gruden is a terrible director.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves it. He's like, you can come here. We're going to make it as boring as humanly possible.
His directorial debut wins an Emmy for being terrible.
Yeah, and he would celebrate every bit of it.
All right, a pro soccer coach with one caught in the ringer. The worst.
It's time for the biggest stories of the day, according to Mike Costa.
This is going to take some getting used to.
Does he know where this pirate hooker's mouth has been?
This is Costa's Daily Dump.
All right, we'll start off in professional soccer. The Soccer Referees Association, the state's largest LGBTQ support group, condemned Real Salt Lake coach Mike Petke for his use of homophobic slurs directed at referees after last week's match. The Salt Lake Tribune confirmed he repeatedly used a term that is considered a homophobic slur in some Spanish-speaking countries. And then he doubled down after the altercation on the field. Petke waited for the referee crew in the tunnel at the stadium and continued to yell the slur in Spanish. He also made a handwritten sign that he displayed the slur on and confronted the referees with it. Tolerance there, huh?
Yikes.
They say sports are good for your health, but they probably don't mean the Dutch sport of pole sitting, which sees competitors literally sitting on wooden poles for dozens of hours until they surrender to either numbness or boredom. This unusually boring sport inspired one of the worst films in Dutch cinematography called Sportsman of the Century. It tells the story of an avid pole sitter practitioner training to break the fictional record of 250 days sitting on a pole since early childhood. He even fathers a baby while sitting on the pole and proceeds to lose his love interest after refusing to cancel his participation in a competition to help her. He ultimately dies as an old man sitting on a pole, obviously in 2006. The film was nominated for 2 Golden Onions in the categories Worst Film and Worst Director. Pole sitting in Dutch is known officially as Zittenpolzijnen Nederlander, which translates to Wednesdays at Jim Russell's house. Someone really lost their lunch. A man living in the New York City borough of Queens.
Wait. He fathered a child and died of old age. What?
Yeah.
You can't just. What the hell are you? Like over the course of his life, or he never left, or?
I guess so. You know, it was a messy pull. Someone really lost their lunch. A man living in the New York City borough of Queens allegedly stumbled upon an untouched and wrapped In-N-Out double-double burger on the street. A discovery that has embarked him on a quest for the truth. The burger was found on a street in Jamaica, Queens, approximately 1,500 miles away from the nearest In-N-Out. Lincoln Byme said, "It genuinely shook me to my core. We didn't touch it. We stopped for a second and took photos and looked around to see if anyone else was noticing it. And then we walked on." Byme, who is originally from L.A., said In-N-Out would be his death row last meal. He said he's tried to bring the hamburger back to the Big Apple on trips to the West Coast, but it always ends up soggy, wet, and mushy, more commonly known as Wednesdays at Jim Russell's house. Right now, 13th caller, 844-570-1360. There are two more spots open in the 4th Annual Fantasy Football Camp on August 24th at Harrah's Resort Casino. Draft in style at the best fantasy football event in San Diego. Bring your league of eight or more with you, and just for showing up, you put yourself in the running to win $3,000 worth of cash and prizes. Right now, 13th caller at 844-570-1360. One of those spots is yours.
If you lose, do you end up at Jim Russell's house? Something? Hey, something about that? Hey, just a reminder as well. Tomorrow, 5 o'clock, Raiders-Rams, right here on Extra 1360. It all begins. It all begins. Thank God that ended. But tomorrow, the
NFL. Hey, Mike,
NFL.
How are the Raiders going to be this year?
Wow. I really enjoyed Mike Florio. That was tough for you to follow, obviously. I think that may be part of the issue.
I think starting next week, there's no more Daily Dump, man.
Yeah, we may have to.
Come on, soggy, wet, and mushy. More commonly known as Wednesdays at Jim Russell's house.
Hey! Like, is Jim cooking for us, okay, or is there something weirder going on?
Obviously, it didn't land if you have to ask backstory to it.
Like, explain. Is it the, is it his garden that's not doing well? I don't understand exactly what's intended.
Is the leather jacket mushy?
Yeah, was it a leather jacket joke?
You know, there sometimes has to be team support for a team member, even when you don't agree with what's going on. And this was one of those instances where you could have just given me a phony courtesy laugh.
Yeah, nobody's that supportive.
Okay.
There's support, and then there's... Man, you're on your own. Oh, man. You are. I mean, no one was there to save me with my peach pit.
That's true.
You know?
That's right. Listen, you're tight roping, you're tight walk roping without a net.
Yeah, okay. This was very anybody, nobody?
No.
Nobody.
Is this on?
Thank goodness for this. There's only one man.
You are one pathetic loser.
There's only one man that could save where we are this second.
Damn it!
He stands 6'5". He's got green arms, and is the first edition of our Football Hour with Nick Hardwick every Monday and Friday at 8 o'clock. And guess what? Nick in studio.